Hey everyone, this is John. This is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is episode 2 of the Corona Cast. And it is day 4 of the forced vacation that I'm currently on. So it is day 4 of being relatively cooped up. I mean, we've been lucky enough in our area to not have to isolate completely. There are, of course, still some places open. There are some county parks, some natural springs that we went to one of them on the first day, and we went to what do we do the next day? Now the days have all bled together. I can't remember. But tomorrow we're actually making a trip out to the beach, out to the Atlantic. So, you know, there's still things that we can do. We're not just locked down in our house. But, you know, it does get very warm in the state, in the Orlando area. So, you know, being out in midday isn't exactly ideal. even during today's the last day of winter. I suppose tomorrow's the 19th, and I think the 19th this month is the equinox. So that's when, you know, we officially enter into spring. But, you know, I made a couple trips to the grocery store to try to, you know, get things here and there that we need. Pretty typically by the time I get there, you know, mid-afternoon, midday, all the toilet paper is gone, all of the bread is gone. Chicken and ground beef are also two other things that are pretty hard to come by. So, you know, we actually had a pretty decent stock already of most of those, of at least toilet paper. We actually had a bulk order come in from Amazon. It was actually, we ordered it kind of the day the panic started, so as not to, you know, run into all the silliness at actual stores. But we got, so we ordered on Amazon, and it was actually not supposed to come until April the 12th. So, you know, a few weeks out here, but it arrived yesterday at time of recording here. So that was nice. So, you know, we got a nice, more toilet paper than we'll ever need for the next couple months, which is nice so we don't have to think about that whole panicked situation. But, you know, we may make another trip tomorrow and see how it goes. So you know, trying to keep busy. Trying to stay active as much as we can, but like movie theaters are all shut down. I'm not sure about malls. I don't know if any malls are currently still open. Because there are some things that the kids can do at some of the local malls. There's no restaurants. So some restaurants are still operational. But most of them are only doing takeout. Like me and the wife dropped the kids off with my parents, the grandparents, earlier today because we were just going to go get some lunch. And yeah, it was takeout only. So we had to stand there till our order was ready. You know, they weren't even all that busy, even at the noon hour. So, you know, things are getting weird. Not so much dire because, you know, we're still in a pretty good spot, especially comparatively speaking. But, you know, still not as normal as, of course, I would like them to be. So, that's the Corona update. So what I'm doing now that we kind of entered our afternoon isolation, there's a worldwide pandemic. So I thought, what better game to play than a game about an outbreak in Resident Evil? I'm playing Code Veronica right now as I'm recording because it's my favorite in the series. I think I've probably mentioned that multiple times. I really like just cause the way that all of the they kind of like give you this larger environment in the prison island, especially in the opening of the game, that still feels very connected. Like you have to move back and forth between a lot of the different areas multiple times. It's an environment, and this is my introduction to the series. So a lot of my appreciation of it most likely comes from a bit of nostalgia. Because I remember the first time I played this game, my buddy John had gotten a Dreamcast. And we were early teens, probably, at the time. What was the Dreamcast? Like 1999? So in 1999, yeah, we were probably like 14 or 15 years old. And he had his own, like, I don't know, business such as a 13 or 14 year old could have, where he would, you know, mow lawns, kind of a typical thing for a kid that age to do to make some money. But he actually had like multiple regular clients, and you know, for a kid that age, he was making some pretty good money. So he bought, you know, a brand new video console himself with you know, his own money that he made. So at the time, it really felt like he was making bank. So he got himself a Dreamcast and a couple of games, including Code Veronica when it came out. And I remember the most ever played of this game was at his place. We would have sleepovers, and he was a late sleeper, I remember, because there were days where I would stay the night at his house. It'd be like 9 a.m. I'd be waking up, and he'd be sleeping till noon. So I'd have like 3 hours with Code Veronica while he was just kind of like passed out. And right now I am dealing with the first situation that you get yourself into in Code Veronica, where zombies crash through the window in the guardhouse, and you get to pick up the dual guns, the MDR-100s, I think they're called. Oh, M-100Ps is the name of those guns. And one of the things about this game is, like, it does give you plenty of weapons, plenty of ammunition, man. There's never really much of a need to conserve anything in this game when you know what you're doing. Early on, it can be tempting to use the knife, because the knife is a much more useful tool in this game, because you're able to slash at the kneecap and down a zombie when you get your timing right. And, you know, the timing can be tricky to figure out, you know, when you first start going. But, you know, once you play this game a lot, you have a pretty good idea of where you need to slash. But, you know, even if you're not doing that technique, you know, it's still useful to keep your knife around for the early parts of the game, because you can down a zombie with a few bullets and then conserve a few bullets by taking a few slashes with the knife while they're down. And you can save yourself here and there, but, you know, you really don't need to save much in this game in order to, you know, have more than enough ammunition to get yourself to the end. It was one of the friendlier things about this game. And, you know, from a difficulty perspective, I don't know, it's hard to compare, because I don't remember much about playing Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, and the original, because this was the first one. But, and maybe it is because this was my first Resident Evil that I have a different perspective on the difficulty of it, but it's not really that tough of a game when you know what you're doing. And one of the things about all of these Resident Evil games is that they're so eminently replayable, because you get to like formulate your own technique. And the more you play it, the more you know, okay, well, I'm going to use this thing in this spot, and I'm going to save this ammo for later, so I'm going to stash it in a box. So, you know, there's so much room for improvisation, and then just, like, finding your own methods and your own way to, like, do the most efficient runs possible, which is something that I really like about this game. But anyway, I was saying, during those sleepovers, but yeah, I would just, like, play the game for a few hours, and, like, he had, even at the time, like, a little guide to, like, so that you wouldn't miss any items. And to this day, like, I've been tempted to speed run this game, but I like to pick up everything, and maybe, like, a long play is the best thing to do, like, to describe the way that I play the game. Because even though, you know, you don't need all of the ammo, you don't need all of the herbs and the health restoration things, I got a pretty good rhythm for, you know, what items I'm going to need next. You know, it's still fun to just grab all of the stuff and go through as efficiently as possible, like grabbing everything. But like I was saying, that's like the fun of replaying the game, is just being able to know what things you're gonna need and when. So I'm at the part now where you have to put together, there's a metal detector. I'm running through the metal detectors now. And there's a fun strategy to using this metal detector, because what you want to do is leave it tripped so you can block up the windows as often as possible so that the zombies don't break through, so you don't have to ever deal with them. But what you need to do is you need to create a duplicate insignia so you can actually escape from the prison area. And again, like this might have been something that was a bit challenging to figure out at the time. Not so much anymore. I gotta inspect my items to make sure I have room for other things as I pick them up, because I do have a couple more things I need to pick up as I go here. I like to use the M100Ps throughout the beginning of the game. It's another good way to save ammo, because they're not really a powerful enough gun to really justify using all that often. Another situation they get into in this is that you got to open up the garage door and there's two zombies behind it, and there's an exploding barrel you can use. Sometimes it's tough to aim at, and sometimes like it's not really super successful in firing the thing that you want to fire at. You do get to dual wheel. Oh, that was weird. It looks like my controller's drifting a little bit. Anyway, that's an excuse. So, there's another item I can pick up in here. It's a little, I better go stash the fire extinguisher. Ooh, I need to stash a couple of things. My goodness, I need to be more efficient with what I'm picking up. I'm messing up here a little bit. So I can probably, since I got the MP100s on me, I can probably stash the handgun and the bullets and the knife just to give myself more room to carry stuff around. I'm going to need the extinguisher, and it won't let me deposit the herbs that I picked up. I think there is another herb that I might have missed. I could probably do some combining to save space. This is one of the cool things about early Resident Evil, is just kind of figuring out what all the stuff you need to take is and opening up paths for yourself. I really like this game because there are a couple of times where you open up shortcuts. And there might be one or two optional ones that you open up just by picking up an item that you don't necessarily need. And I like when games do that. They have like side items. There are a couple of weapons in this game that you don't need to pick up. And probably one of the most nerve-wracking parts of the game is this part right here. You know, early on, when you're first playing it, you get surprised by these dogs that crash from underneath. It's very much a callback to the original Resident Evil, when, you know, you're going through, I think it was the hallway or maybe the outside area, and dogs pop out from the windows or from behind a fence and chase you around. You know, it's a callback that they do in a lot of Resident Evil games, because it can be so nerve-wracking to be chased down by these things. But pretty much in this hallway, you know, once you get by them the first time and use the key to unlock the round, like the back route or the main route, so you don't have to go the roundabout way all the way around the guard building, you know, you're set. You're good to go. You don't need to ever deal with them. And that's one of the things about a lot of Resident Evil games. There's always, you know, some enemies here or there that you just plain don't need to worry about. So one of the tricks is coming up with which ones are necessary and which ones are not. I'm still getting this weird drift when I auto-aim. Anyway, auto-aim is another cool feature from these older Resident Evil games that, you know, and not so much so that, you know, you can shoot an enemy in front of you, because, you know, it's not all that difficult to just, like, point the gun and turn it to an enemy that you want to shoot at. It's more to, you know, figure out, oop, got myself into some trouble there. It's more about figuring who's still alive, because sometimes a downed enemy will still be active and bite you on the leg as you run by. And using the auto aim just gives you a quick, like if you look away from an enemy and use the auto aim, just gives you a quick turnaround to any enemies that are still active. I'm gonna go ahead and use an herb because I got some, And I really don't like walking around holding my shoulder. It's more of an aesthetic thing. I don't want to look like I'm injured. This fire extinguisher, I think this is an optional thing to refill it later in the game, if I remember correctly. So, you know, you kind of bring it forward. You have to grab it again as Chris. Actually, I don't think you have to do it as Chris. You might be able to do it as Claire later. And stash it in a storage box so that you can refill it later to get a better gun. Something that is also one of the weirder, obtuse things about these Resident Evil games is like you have to examine items to kind of get better descriptions. And in this game, there are like briefcases that you have to look at in order to open them up and get the thing inside. And you know, it's like an extra step for, you know, a very small like a puzzle element. If this game were being remade, I would imagine that they would just do, like, hey, you found the thing. You don't need to go through the process of opening up a briefcase or clicking on something, because it doesn't really add anything to the game. You know, it is cool that we have back-to-back years now with Resident Evil remakes. You know, we got Resident Evil 2, of course not on Switch, unfortunately. Maybe one day. Maybe on the Super Switch. These Resident Evil games, these remakes, will make their way over. Resident Evil 2 and then Resident Evil 3 remake is due out, I think, this spring, later this year, pretty soon now. So it's cool if they're remaking these games, and there's an appreciation for them still. And they're, of course, remaking them in a much more modern style, and it looks to be much more action-based, like more modern Resident Evil, which, you know, is okay. I have not played Resident Evil 2, so I can't speak to how much they still like lean into like finding the right keys for the right rooms and finding items to do like these lateral puzzles, which is the thing that I like most about Resident Evil games, is why I like these classic ones the best. But yeah, you know, maybe some point I'll grab a PS4 and give those games a shot. I don't know if there's no guarantee that would ever come out to a Super Switch, so It all depends on, you know, funds and if I'm back at work and all sorts of different things. Because I was actually looking at, there was that PS5 announcement. They talked about a bunch of tech specs, which is not at all interesting to me. The one interesting thing that I did see from that is the backwards compatibility. There were rumors, and you know, they're a bit pie in the sky, even at the time. There were rumors of it being fully backwards compatible all the way to PS1, which would be super impressive. That would be a really impressive piece of tech and really cool to just be able to grab one so that, you know, you have that one piece of hardware that will play all those games. Because I've never owned a PS3 or PS4, and I do have a running list of games that would be really cool to have on those systems. But since it's not fully backwards compatible, it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe the right move is to go PS4 so I can play PS3 and PS4 games on this system, because it'd be really nice to be able to do that. The thing is that I found out is that you can't play PS3 games on a PS4, which is really surprising. I'd thought that the backwards compatibility was more important to them, but I guess it just goes to show how closely I follow, you know, the PlayStation scene. But you know, as I was looking through it and thinking like, hey, maybe end of the year, depending on what other games are coming out, maybe I buy another system to play one or two games from time to time on a Sony system. And I'm looking at the list of games, I'm looking at my wish list of PS3 games, and I'm looking at my wish list of PS4 games, and I'm thinking like, I am much more impressed with like the quality of games on PS4 than PS3. Like the stuff on PS3 is stuff that I'll have like passing interest in, stuff like BioShock, and there's even that rumor of BioShock Infinite making its way over to Switch at some point. So that might not even be a necessary buy. And I'm looking at stuff on the PS4, and you're seeing things like Shadow of the Colossus remake, The Last Guardian, Persona 5, which, you know, every day seems less and less likely that ever come to the Switch, unfortunately. I'm seeing games like the Final Fantasy VII remake, which that would be something that would be really great to see come to the Super Switch one day, and that's something that, you know, if I do take the plunge on a PS4 at some point, I would absolutely double dip on that to, if it ever came to a Super Switch. I mean, especially if they started bringing the rest of the games, that episodic game over to the Nintendo console. That's where I would want to play it first. But, you know, and this is all just kind of pie in the sky stuff. There are a bunch of things I would like to get. I'd like to get a new TV because now, you know, in the new house, the living room is bigger. So, you know, the old TV doesn't quite look as nice. I might need a new GameCube controller because Claire is having a hard time moving this metal box. Gotta, like, just lean against it to push it. And she goes through the animation to push it, and it moves, like, God, like half a pixel. And then she goes back into her walking animation. Yeah, I might need a new GameCube controller. My goodness, I thought this thing was going to last forever. Oh, GameCube controllers aren't exactly hard to come by, so it's not the biggest deal in the world. It's going to take me an hour and a half to fully push this box into place. But, you know, in all likelihood, there'll be plenty of Switch games coming out, and I won't be able to justify getting any new hardware yet. So, and you know, it's not a situation where, you know, I would ever want to talk extended about like a PS4 game. Oh, I might be totally stuck because now the silver box isn't moving at all over the fire, and it needs, oh, maybe it doesn't need to. Maybe I can work my way across. Nope, sure can't. Gonna need to either switch controllers or call it a day. But actually, me and Des earlier, after we dropped the kids off, since we were only able to get takeout because of the coronavirus, we came back home and but before we went back out to get the kids, after we ate, we plugged Darkside Chronicles back into the old Wii U. Of course, it was a Wii game, and it took me a couple minutes to relearn how to sync up Wii remotes. And God, the Switch has me so spoiled because it is so damn easy to sync up any controller, like especially Joy-Con. They really nailed just being able to connect controllers to this thing so you can get multiplayer going extremely quickly. It is really, really impressive how easy it is to do that. And, you know, pro controllers are a bit more complicated. You'd have to go through a sync process. Easiest way to do it, I found, is just to connect it through the hardwire, through the USB port, and that does it immediately. So I always keep a wire around in case somebody brings by a pro controller for some multiplayer gaming. But after we got the Wii remote, we needed a second Wii remote connected to the Wii U. We were playing through that game, and the Wii was a really great console for those light gun shooters, and we got so much just mileage out of games like Resident Evil Chronicles and Darkside Chronicles and House of the Dead Overkill. We replayed those games so many times, and it was like we were 24 again playing light gun shooters on Wii. It was a lot of fun. I think that something that didn't exactly, you know, vibe with her this time around is that the camera is very shaky. They whip pan around a lot, so you don't get a whole lot of time to shoot as many zombies as you would want to. Because it's not a difficult game. We made it through. It's structured so that, you know, you have, you're basically replaying through the narrative beats of Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil Code Veronica with some added content. And then there are also these segments where you're playing as Leon and Krauser going on this original story through, and Leon's telling the story of like the Raccoon City outbreak and the prison island outbreak from Claire's perspective as he's going on this other adventure with Krauser. And I forgot where I was going with this. Completely slipped my mind where I was going with this, but you basically play like the original content, like the original story stuff, is kind of played through these interstitial segments, and you kind of like play through the content of Resident Evil 2 and Code Veronica as the main bulk of the game. But, you know, even though there's like the shaky cam and it like whips around a lot, so you're not able to always line up your shots the way you want to, it does feel really good to pull off a headshot to get bonus points. Environments are destructible, so you can like collect cash to upgrade your guns, and these were all things I had completely forgotten about. It was like playing a brand new game again, except, you know, it didn't look particularly great. And that was one of the things that I noticed as well. Like, of course, it was the Wii So, you know, you give it a little bit of leeway, but like the environments themselves were low res but fine, but like a lot of like the water in the game looked really, really bad. Character models were, you know, fine. But, you know, just as like a fun little arcade light gun game, I think that, you know, Capcom did a really great job with these two. And it was nice at the time to at least get something while they were bringing like their mainline Resident Evil games to other systems. At the time it was like Resident Evil 4 and 5 and 6 were the, you know, the HD games on the other systems. But it was cool that they were still bringing games over. And it's something like, I really wish Capcom would bring more original content like that to Switch. The Wii was a big enough audience where they just couldn't ignore the install base, even though like a lot of the install base was buying a Wii and then maybe a couple of games. You know, the attach rate wasn't as desired or as desirable as you would want on your game system. But you know, there were so many hardware units out there that they had to put software on there. And I think like we've passed that point with the Switch. It's a popular console. It's doing really well. So, you know, a lot of these third parties, especially Japanese third parties, it's really time for them to step it up and start getting some games on there. Otherwise, they're going to miss the boat completely and will be on to the next system before they're able to fully take advantage. And it's a shame, really. I'm hopeful that now on the next system, on the Super Switch, or, you know, whatever Nintendo does next, that they have, you know, a good enough track record or good enough good faith built up with the Switch that they show they can move hardware, so it's worth it to have games on their system. Because like the whole like, you know, year or two, the first 2 years are like, okay, well, we're gonna test out this and see how it does and then maybe we'll support it. I think the time for that is over. I think that it's really time that, you know, all these different third parties really step up and start doing some legitimate good faith efforts on Nintendo systems. So I think we're nearing the end of CoronaCast 2 here. Ryan is coming by tonight, and we're going to be doing the retro show. So that should post in a couple of days, and maybe an After Dark. We'll see how we feel when, as we're recording, see if we have much to say. It's the main topic for the retro show is going to be Mario Party 64. I can't imagine that we're going to be going on a whole lot about that, so we'll probably do an After Dark just to get some extra content out there too. But yeah, Ryan is doing fine. We're all doing fine over here. Wes is still in voluntary self-isolation because he did come back from Europe a little bit under the weather. I mentioned that before. So he's still going to be shutting himself off from the world for at least another week and see how he's doing after that. And it's going to be... I did get official word from my place of work that they're going to be paying us through the end of the month, at least. So that's nice to know. It was also very nice. Like me and Des had some scheduled vacation days, and what they're going to end up doing is like replenishing those vacation days and just paying us through as if we were working, which is a really nice thing to do. I wasn't expecting that. That's was a really nice gesture. It was very much appreciated. We still don't know when things are going to be opening back up. So, we're just trying to keep our heads up and keep on charging forward as if everything's going to be fine. Because most likely everything will be fine. We're all feeling good. No one's getting sick. So, it's all going to be okay. We're going to charge through it. The biggest disappointment, the biggest challenge that we're going to have to get through over the next couple of weeks is that Amazon has delayed my Animal Crossing pre-order. It is not arriving on the 20th. It is now arriving on the 24th, which, Amazon, why am I paying you for Prime? Why are we doing this? I kid, of course. But anyway, That's it. That's the end. Until Corona Cast number 3, everyone.